Well, good morning. As Billy mentioned, Corey and his family are in Branson for a few days, spending some time with family, so he asked me to fill in this morning. So if you're visiting with us, I do hope that you'll come back on a different day when you can hear a good sermon, because today you're stuck with me. If you'll turn to James chapter 4, we'll be there in a little bit. Like many sermons that are preached, if you've ever preached a sermon, a lot of the times you find something that you need to hear, and then you prepare a lesson about it. So this morning's lesson was prepared for myself, and hopefully there might be someone else here this morning that can gain something from it. As I continue to get older, it seems like life continues to go faster, get shorter, and often I continue to realize the things that I wish I would have done differently. Unfortunately, we do not get a do-over when it comes to life. But luckily, as long as we are still alive, then we can alter the course we are on. For me, it feels like my life has been filled with stages. And some of you might recognize some of these stages yourself. As a kid, I felt like I was invincible. I felt like I had my entire life ahead of me, and I had all the time in the world and the whole world to try to figure it out. And then you graduate college and you get a job and get married, and as a young married adult, I felt like I had a lot of time, but I really didn't have any money. So there wasn't a lot that we could do. And then life goes on, and we had boys, and we finally had a little bit of money, but didn't have any time to do any things besides work and chase the boys. And for the past 15 years or so, I have lived a life saying, one of these days when I have time, or when things slow down. And I'm willing to bet I'm not the only one who has found themselves throughout life saying those things. I don't know the exact next stages of life I might have, Lord willing, but I'm assuming a time will come where I will have a little time and a little money, but by then the boys will be grown and gone, and a little time and a little money is not really going to matter as much. Then a time will come when, hopefully, Lord willing, we'll have grandkids, so we enter a stage where we have someone to spend a little bit of that time on and a little bit of that money on, but we're just not going to quite feel like doing some of the things that we once did. And then, Lord willing, we'll enter the final stage of our life, which continues to slow till we'll just no longer, till we pass away. Somewhere along in the way in this life of stages, our life slowly and quietly slipped through our fingers. And we will be left wishing we would have done more with the time that we had. So this morning I would like to propose the question, if what we are doing with our time right now really matters. And for me, I believe I've spent most of my life dedicating my time to things that don't really matter. There's a few things I'd like us to consider this morning. And first of all, I would like us to understand that life is extremely short. If you're there in James chapter 4, I'd like to start reading there in verse 13. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Excuse me. Whereas you do not know that what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. No doubt a set of scriptures that I can greatly relate to, and probably many of you can. We spend all of our time planning for what's next, what we have to do this week, what we've got to get done this week, what's coming up, what's on the calendar, what we've got to do by this time next week. We're constantly talking about what we have to do next. But I hope we're reminded of what it says there in verse 14 when it says that Our life is a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. What a perfect illustration this is. If you were out this morning and you breathed, a little bit of vapor came out. But because of this lesson, I paid close attention to how long the vapor lasted, and it just didn't last very long. It was extremely quick. And I think there's things throughout the Bible, we think about signs that God's left us like a rainbow to let us know he'll no longer flood the earth. But there's other things that God has, signs that he has given us to help us to constantly remember things. And I think this illustration was one of those. Every time we see a vapor and then it quickly vanishes away, we should be reminded that that's what our life is compared to. The Bible and other verses ask us to consider how short our life really is and what will remain after we are gone. In Psalms chapter 39, in Psalms chapter 39, there in verse 4, it says, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but a vapor. Here we're given two illustrations of how short our life really is. There at the end, we read a vapor, which we've already discussed. But in the first part of that, he talks about it being a handbreadth. Now, the word handbreadth is used multiple times throughout the Bible to literally measure something. And it is the distance across your four knuckles when you put your hands together. So here we're told that our life is from here to here. Now, when you think in the grand scheme of things in the world and all the time, and when you think about eternity, I have a pretty big hand. But from here to here is not very long. But that is how long our life is. In Job chapter 14, Job chapter 14, starting there in verse 1, man who is born of woman is of a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. Here we're painted the picture of how short our life is when you think about a flower. No doubt there's that time of the year in the spring when maybe you drive into your driveway and you see all of a sudden the flowers have bloomed and just how pretty they are. And then it doesn't seem like much days have passed and you pull in there and they're all dried up and starting to die. If you're at our house, that's a lot quicker than maybe for some of you guys, but it doesn't seem like the flowers last long for us. But again, it's a remembrance, a continued remembrance of how short our life truly is. So as we work throughout the remainder of the lesson today, I want us to, in the back of your mind, keep in mind how short life truly is. The second thing I would like us to understand is the world will keep going on after we are gone. Unless the Lord comes back the day we die, the world's going to keep going. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, there in verse 4, one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. A scriptural remembrance of how one generation will be gone and right behind it another one begins. Each day worldwide, an average of 360,000 babies are born and 165,000 people die. So when you really think about it, the next generation is coming on far faster than the old one is passing away. Again, a remembrance of how when one thing dies, almost two more things come up. The world is going to continue to go on after we are gone. In Psalms chapter 103, Psalms chapter 103, starting there in verse 15, As for man, his days are like grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourishes, for the wind passes over it, and it is gone, and its place remembers it no more. Once again, we've all drove across or maybe looked in our yard, and maybe it's filled with dandelions, as much as I hate them, but then it doesn't take long, and you come by, and they're gone. But they're not even remembered anymore. They're just gone. The world continues to go on. The next two verses that we'll look at are ones that are probably a little bit more familiar and ones to me that really have hit home. In Luke chapter 12, starting there in verse 16, then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentiful. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this, I will put down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be married. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Now, no doubt this is a set of scriptures that we've read often and probably spent a lot of time thinking about it. But throughout life, it really starts to hit home. Many of the people here this morning are farmers to some extent. And how many times have we wanted a little bit bigger barn, a little bit more land, a little bit more of this, a little bit nicer of this? And if you're not farmers, it pertains to something, a bigger boat, a nicer boat. We always want something. We always want more. We always want greater. But here, this individual is referred to as what? A fool. Why was he considered a fool? Because everything that he had, all of those possessions, all of the bigger barns he was going to build, someday they were going to be somebody else's. And we need to consider that. We're spending a life building something that one day, like a vapor, is going to be somebody else's. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, there in verse 18, then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. This individual kind of had it figured out. He began to hate the toils, all of the work that he put into things, because he understood that he would have to leave it to a man who comes after him. On May 18th, Grandpa left his house on a Sunday to come to church and sat right there for the very last time. It's not been that long ago. He didn't realize that the next day he was going to have a stroke and never was going to be able to return home or to return here. 21 weeks later, while we were all gathered here together, we found out together that Grandpa had passed away. And now 33 weeks later, since his last time he was able to be here and be at home, if you drive by his house, somebody else lives there. And that's not meant to be sad. I'm not saying that to be sad. I'm saying because it's a constant reminder to me that life will go on. In fact, making multiple trips past that house the last couple weeks has what led me to putting this lesson together, because every time I drive by, I'm reminded that once I'm gone, life will go on. I think of all the time he spent in his garage, all the Christmases and Thanksgivings we spent there with Grandma running around. They were all wonderful memories. But in that very home, someone else is going to have those memories now. Life will go on. We have established two undeniable truths from Scripture so far this morning. First of all, we have understood and established that life is short. It's a vapor. It will quickly be gone. And second, unless the Lord comes back, then we have established the fact that the world will keep going after we are gone. But you know, that isn't the only thing that's going to keep going after we have died. Our souls will also continue to live on. In both 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, and Romans chapter 14, verses 10 through 12, both tell us that we will all stand before the judgment seat and we are going to be judged based on our deeds, whether good or bad. When we're gone and standing in front of the judgment seat, only two things are going to truly matter. And if those are the only two things that are going to matter then I would like to propose this morning that those are the only two things that should matter now. And we can find those two things in Matthew chapter 22. In Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 and 38, it reads, these are verses we're all familiar with, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." The older I get, I'm convinced that only these two things really matter. And I would like to look at them a little bit more in depth, but in reverse order. So first, I would like to look at how we love our neighbor. See, when we're gone, that's going to be the only way that we're remembered here on earth. That's going to be our legacy. That's what people are going to talk about us, Lord willing, down the road, was how we treated our neighbor. I can't help but think yesterday in town at Russ's funeral, if you were there, it talked about all of the good things that he did and all the kind words that were said about him, especially by his two boys. And I couldn't help but think to myself, if that was my funeral, what would my two boys say about me? It's pretty simple. I think they'd say he worked a lot and was usually a little angry. And maybe some of you can relate to that. I'm not so sure that's how I want to be remembered. Luckily, as long as we're still alive, we can course correct. For the purpose of an illustration here this morning, I would like to ask a question, and I'm going to ask for a little bit of participation. I asked the question, how many of you know the company that I have worked for the last almost 6 years and what my job title was? And if you do, raise your hand. There's a couple. That's interesting because the most of my family's in here this morning. And my closest friends are here this morning. And I only bring that up, Sarah didn't even raise her hand, if it makes you guys feel any better. And I only bring that up because I've dedicated myself to them and I've loved it. And they have appreciated me and taken great care of me and I've enjoyed every moment of it. It's been wonderful. But all of the great things that I have accomplished there, all of the feats we have did, all of the growth we have had, doesn't really matter. Most of you don't even know where I work. It doesn't matter. In fact, most of us will spend a life working for something, and you know what it ends up being? It ends up being one sentence in our obituary. That's really all it ends up being. But if you asked me last week or a year ago what was most important or what I spent all my time doing, and it kind of ties into Billy's lesson this morning, I dedicated everything I had to them. I remember the night that Riston was baptized. You know where I was? It was late, 11:30 or 12. We'd had a fire, so I went over there. It's what you do when you're a dedicated employee in the middle of the night. You go, you do. And I'm not saying I could have done things differently. I'm just saying that when you look back, you think of all the sacrifices that you make for a company and all the good things that you do and all the money you made them, which is great. We have to provide for our families. But at the end of it, ends up being one sentence in our obituary. What's all the rest of it talk about? Your family, the way you loved your Lord, and the way you loved your neighbors. That's what the rest of your obituary is. In Hebrews chapter 11, there in verse 4, by faith Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offering, and by faith Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. See, even though after we die, we are going to continue to speak. What are we going to say? After we are dead and gone, what are we going to say to those left behind? I want people to say I loved my neighbor. If you'll turn to Luke chapter 10, we have a perfect account of this. In Luke chapter 10, starting there in verse 27, so he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. We've already referred this to in Matthew, but Matthew left out this next parable. And he said to him, you have answered rightly, do this, or this next saying, you have answered rightly and do this, you will live. But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? And he said, he who showed mercy on him. This probably wasn't said very much in the Bible, but I want to be the Samaritan. You wouldn't have, if you got to pick between a Levite, a priest, and a Samaritan, not many people would have picked the Samaritan. But in this instance, I don't want to be remembered as a Levite or as the priest. I want to be remembered as the Samaritan. And I think that's something that we need to think about as we walk our lives. That's how we're going to be remembered. Think of all the great things that the priest and the Levite had probably done. Think of all the great things. They probably had done some good things. But in this instance, when these three men passed away, what's going to be said? That Greek, or that word mercy there that we read at the end of our reading, when he said he had mercy on them, Christ said to have mercy, that Greek word is eleos, and the core meaning is compassion that moves someone to action. And I bring that up because loving your neighbor is not a warm, fuzzy feeling that you have towards the person that lives next to you. Loving them is compassion that moves us to action, to doing something, to actually helping them. In Galatians chapter 6, starting there in verse 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reaps everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. We understand this concept of what you reap, you will sow. If I go out into my field and I plant sedan grass, I'm not going to get corn. We understand that. We all understand that. If we go out into this world and sow anger and strife and tension and pride and all these things, that's what we're going to reap. But it says we want goodness. How are we going to get goodness? We have to plant goodness. As Christians, everywhere we go, we need to be sowing goodness, being kind to others, loving our neighbors, because then we too will reap it. Next on what really matters, we've talked about loving our neighbor, but next in the first commandment that was listed is how we love our God. When I think about loving our God, I chuckle a little bit because I feel like the world has overcomplicated what it means to love God. It's pretty easy to understand. The Bible makes this part of it pretty clear. In John chapter 14, verse 15, a verse we all know, if you love me, so if we're trying to love God, we don't have to wonder what we have to do to show him that we love him. It says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. You will obey him, all of his commandments. We could spend hours going through what all those are, but from a bird's eye view, if we want to show God that we love him, it's just like if we want to show our neighbors that we love them, it's not a warm, fuzzy feeling. It is keeping his commandments. I'm reminded there in Matthew chapter 7, starting there in verse 21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. These people knew him. They knew who he was, but what did they not do? They didn't keep his commandments. So what did they really not do? They didn't love him. They didn't love him. In this verse, we draw a distinction between a group of people who know who God is, which there's a lot in the world who know who God is, and people who truly love him by keeping his commandments. There is a distinction drawn here. So I ask the question, are you keeping his commandments? Or do you just know him? Something we all have to ask ourselves. I personally believe that most everyone in here knows what his commandments are. Most of us have been in the church a long time, have studied the Bible a lot. We know what his commandments are. It just comes down to whether or not we truly love him or not. Whether we know him or we love him is two completely different things. There in John chapter 14, verse 15, which we already read, it says that he who loves him will keep my commandments. The Greek word keep there is terio, and I want you to see what that word truly means in the Greek. To guard. Are we guarding God's commandments? To watch over. Are we watching over God's commandments? To preserve. Are we preserving God's commandments, or are we watering them down to please the world? To hold fast. Are we holding fast to God's commandments in everything that we do, in every walk of life, in every place that we find us, in all of our actions? Are we holding fast to him? to carefully observe. Are we carefully observing God's commandments? This goes back to Billy's lesson. Are we in the Bible? Are we studying? Are we knowing what we have to do? Are we carefully, not just observing them, but are we carefully observing them? And the last is to treasure. Do we treasure God's commandments? You know, we think of as a kid maybe hidden treasures, but as we get older, there are certain treasures that are really important to us. Maybe it's an old shotgun. Maybe it's a family heirloom. Maybe it's just our family in general, or an old vehicle, or maybe we just went out and bought something new and nice, and you just don't want the kids to get in there because you know they're going to tear it up or destroy it, because in our mind, it's a treasure. Do we treat God's commandments like that? I'd like to conclude by each of us asking ourselves a question this morning. What are we doing with our life? It's like a vapor, and when we're gone, the world's going to keep going. So what are we doing with our vapor? What are we doing with our life? Do we love our neighbor? Do we love our Lord? Again, not a warm, fuzzy feeling, not wishing the best on everyone around us. But are we showing mercy like the Samaritan did, where we show them that we love them through our action? Are we showing God that we love him through our action of keeping his commandments? It is an action. It is doing something. If not, you can change the course. Your life is on. And you can start that today. So far, the Lord has blessed each of us with today. A little bit more length in our vapor. We can do with it whatever we want. That's a decision we can make. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1, I think, really combines all this together. And it says, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death better than the day of one's birth. It's a pretty powerful verse when you think about it. Back then, precious ointment was worth quite a bit. But it let us know that a good name is better than that. What's going to give us a good name? How we love our neighbors. And then it goes on to say, in the day of death better than the day of one's birth. Now, I've been around a handful of births in my day and a handful of deaths in my day. And it's really hard to see that the day of a death is better than the day of birth. But the Bible says that it should be. But this is only true for those whose name is written in the book of life. As we started this morning, our souls will continue on through eternity. And the only way that our death is going to be better than our birth is on that day of judgment, we can stand in front of him and give the account. We're going to be judged in all of our deeds, whether good or bad, if we can stand there and he can say, Brian, I saw that you loved your neighbor. Brian, I saw that you loved me. That's all that's going to matter. If your name's not written in the book of life, we can add it there today. If anyone needs to be baptized, then we always want to extend that invitation if they need to put on Christ through baptism. Or if you need the prayers of the congregation, then we want to make that right before we leave here. But again, I ask that we remember how short life is. And all that's going to matter on the day of judgment is two things. And if we truly believe that, then today only two things should matter. And I urge us all, including myself, because remember this was written for me, to love my neighbor and to love the Lord. This time we'll stand and sing a song to encourage us.